You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our leadership seminar as part of the Spring 2012 series. My name is Jamie Parmisi. I'm the communications consultant and secretary on the executive officers of the leadership team. Before we begin real quick, I just want to thank a few people for helping coordinate this. I want to thank Russell Barefoot, our advisor, and also our director of student life. Alicia Walker, our coordinator of student life. Barbara Cannell, our president of Student Government Association. Jill Marie Winters, our vice president of leadership and service in Phi Theta Kappa. Roger Mata, secretary of Student Government Association. Kushwant, he helps in advertising and marketing for the officers of the leadership team. And Albert DeSantos as well, he helps with enrichment. So today, who's going to speak is Senator Christopher Bateman. He was born on October 9th, 1957 in Somerville, and he attended public schools in Somerset County and graduated from Ithaca College with a Bachelor of Arts in History and Political Science in 1980. He is also a graduate of Seton Hall Law School. Senator Bateman has served the 16th District in the legislature since January 1994, when he was elected to the New Jersey General Assembly, where he served seven consecutive terms ending in 2007. In 2008, he was elected senator and currently serves on the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Senate Environment Committee, the Joint Committee on Public Schools, and the Joint Committee on Housing Affordability. He is also the deputy conference leader. Senator Bateman and his family have been good friends and supporters of RVCC for many years. Please help and join me in a warm welcome to our friend and supporter, Senator Christopher Bateman. Now I'd like to introduce the president of Raritan Valley Community College, who will help in welcoming him, President Crable.
I'm not going to use the mic because I don't want to leave my germs over there, but I did want to come down this afternoon and just help welcome the senator to campus for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think it's pretty cool that in the middle of a work day that we're able to have the senator on campus to share his perspectives on leadership. I think that's really what I've experienced from Senator Bateman in terms of how much he supports higher education and how much he supports this college, that he's willing to be here and talk with us. So I want to thank you personally for that.
Thank you, Casey.
Want to encourage my never shy students to ask all of the questions you have about leadership. To make sure that you get the kind of exchange that really help you learn from somebody who's had an awful lot of practice. So, Kip, thank you. And students, I think it's going to be a great program.
Thank you, Casey. Go home. Casey's not feeling well, so she came down, and it was very nice of her to come down. Let me first thank you all very much for the invitation. I always look forward to an opportunity to get out and meet with my constituents, meet with the future leaders of the state and America. I think it's good for you, and it's certainly good for me, because I get to hear what's on your mind. And you know, the issues that we are facing now are very difficult challenges. And before long, especially with, I had an opportunity to meet with many of you, with your backgrounds, no question in my mind, you'll be leading this state or this country in the very near future. So it's great to hear from you. By way of background, I don't know if any of you come in the back way of the county college, but if you look up there on the right, that's the house that I lived in my whole life. Actually, my sister's here too, Joni. We both grew up in that house. My parents built that house about 3 months before I was born, and I lived there my entire life until after college. And so Raritan Valley has always not only been in the neighborhood, but our father was chairman for 25 years. He is very proud of Raritan Valley, as all of us are. And as the legislator representing Raritan Valley, I can't tell you how fortunate you are to be here and how great the education is. And you know, if you ask me, it's the best education for the money spent. And there's no question about it. Not only has it been recognized throughout the state, but nationally. And the education that you're getting here is just tremendous. And you know, I'm always amazed at how well the Raritan Valley students do, not only here, but when they go on to transfer to other schools. And I've heard Rutgers mentioned this morning, I heard Cornell mentioned this morning, wonderful schools, but the education you get here is second to none. So, yeah, I wish you all very well. They had sent me a topic, and I wasn't sure how to how to interpret this, but you know, how do I bounce back from failure? Now, I don't know if that was geared towards me or if that was just a general topic, but I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And talk a little bit about leadership, and then I want to talk about some of the issues that you're facing and that I'm facing in Trent. And, I'm going to give you a little background. Many years ago, I didn't think that I'd be a state senator one day. I always was fascinated by history and political science, and so I went to Ithaca College, as was indicated, and I was a dual major in history and political science. And during my tenure at Ithaca, I had an opportunity to study abroad in Ithaca, London. And it was just probably the best experience of my life. And I had an opportunity to witness many, many countries throughout Europe, and Italy, and Belgium, and Germany, and France, and on and on. I realized how fortunate we are to live in this country. And during that time, I made up my mind that, you know, when I graduate from Ithaca College, I'd like to go on to law school. So I went and I got a job. You're all too young, but there used to be a congresswoman who used to represent this district, Congresswoman Millicent Fenwick. She was very popular for many, many reasons. But one was she smoked the pipe, and one she was really, she was the character in the Doonesbury skit, I mean, the Doonesbury cartoon. And I had an opportunity to work for her, and she was in Congress for many, many years. And then back in 1982, she ran for U.S. Senate. And it's interesting because the issue back then, I think she was 74, was she was too old to be United States Senator. Well, you know who ran against her, for those who follow politics, Frank Luckenberg. And I think it's kind of ironic because I think he's well into his 90s now, and he was making the issue about Millicent back in 1982. I had an opportunity to work in her congressional office, and then when she ran for U.S. Senate, I was her political director, and I was going to law school at night and working for her during the day. And she went on to win the primary, and it was just too much of a lifestyle for me. I couldn't do it all. So I made a decision that I said, she's going to either win or lose without Kip Bateman. So I transferred from 9th Division at Seton Hall Law School to Day Division. And a couple things happened there. One was I met my future wife. We have 4 children right now. We live here in Branchburg. But secondly, when I did that, the local government here in Branchburg approached me, the Republicans, and said, you know, would you be interested in running for township committee? And that's the local level, as you know. I had worked on a couple campaigns, and they said, oh, it's somebody young, some new ideas, we should approach them. And so I made the decision to transfer, and I said, you know what, now that I transferred it to Day Division, I could probably do both, because the township committee meets during the night. And so I did that. Now, Millicent Fenwick, I can really be thankful for 2 women in my career that really have helped advance my career. Now, obviously, I had a background in politics. My dad was involved for 20 years as a state assemblyman, a state senator. He ran for governor in 1977, won the primary, and lost the general election. So I was always exposed to politics, but I'm always grateful for 2 women in particular who helped my career. One was Millicent Fenwick. So when she was running for U.S. Senate, I was running for the township committee. Now, Somerset County in this area is, you know, usually heavily Republican, and Millicent Fenwick did extremely well in this county. Unfortunately, and from my perspective, she lost statewide, but she did so well here in Branchburg and in Somerset County. I was on the ticket with her. I won the election. I was, I think, 24 or 25 years old. Pretty young to be involved in government. And I encourage all of you to get involved at the youngest possible age, because it's been a great experience for me. I went on to become mayor, but Millicent Fenwick had a lot to do with that. And then I was appointed to the Somerset County Freeholders. As you know, it's the county government, and actually the Freeholders have been very supportive of Raritan Valley Community College over the years. And in 1992, another woman who I thought was very instrumental in helping me, and I thought she was good, Christy Whitman, was a Freeholder. And she resigned the Freeholder Board and became president of the Board of Public Utilities. Governor Kane appointed her. And when that vacancy opened up, they appointed me to the Freeholder Board. And then in 1993, she ran for governor, and I ran for state assembly. She went on to win. Again, I was fortunate enough to be on the ticket with her, and I went on to win. I spent 14 years in the assembly, the last 4 years in the Senate. And last year, every 10 years after the census is compiled, they redraw our district. Now, how many here are from the 16th legislative district? I know I've met several people. someone here from Montgomery? Someone here from Three Bridges, right? You're Three Bridges, right? Okay. Well, what they did was they redraw the districts. And so now I represent four different counties. I represent parts of Somerset, parts of Mercer, parts of Middlesex, and parts of Hunterdon. Very difficult county, very difficult district for me. And actually, there are about 5,300 more Democrats than Republicans in my district. I happen to be a Republican. So it's a very competitive district. And I have two county seats. I have towns out in Hunterdon County, and then I have Princeton and South Brunswick, which are, they're a challenge for me. And so I've been spending, you know, the new district just took over in the second week of January. So I've been spending a lot of time getting out to meet my new constituents in Princeton and Hunterdon County, South Brunswick. And we have our share of challenges in Trenton, there's no question about it. And you talk about how do you bounce back from failure. You know, like you, the road has always been, has not always been smooth for me. I've had some bumps in the road. I went to law school. I can be honest with you, I didn't pass the bar the first time or the second time, but ultimately I passed it. And, you know, it made me work harder. And I think that you can be successful. I think failure is part of being successful in life. And I think what you do is you learn from that experience, and you take your knocks, and you stand up, and you work even harder. And I know as students, you've had challenges, because many of you worked, I'm sure, work at the same time you're going to school, and so you've got incredible challenges. But I think ultimately that will make you, I think a more productive person and probably a more successful person. We are living in very challenging times. I mean, I think our governor, and I don't agree with him all the time, but I think overall he's done a good job at Trenton. And right now we're about to start the budget process. He's talking about an income tax cut. Senator Sweeney, who's the president of the Senate, Democrat, they control the Senate, he's talking about a property tax cut. So the fact that they're talking about tax cuts is a sign that the economy is turning around. Revenues are starting to come in. More so, I think that the unemployment rate has dropped a little bit for the first time in months. They're starting to see a little movement in the economy. And I think that's good for students, in particular, all of you who, you know, hope to get into the workforce in the very near future. And I think that one of the frustrations, I happen to have four children, a couple just graduated from college, very difficult right now. You come out of college with a degree ready to go, the job market is not good. And it's frustrating for young adults who have spent many years studying to get their degrees, only to hope that they can be productive in the workforce. The fact that we're talking about tax cuts is a good thing. We're in session right now. What happens is in April, we break for the budget. I'm not on the budget committee. I was asked a couple times, but you know, I'm also a lawyer by trade. You know, I prosecute in a couple towns. And to be on the budget committee, you have to be down in Trenton almost every day in the month of April. I just can't do it. So I'm not on the budget committee. I am on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And one of the most, I think, important aspects of Governor Christie, and probably his most important legacy, is going to be his choices to the Jersey Supreme Court. And tomorrow we have a Senate Judiciary Committee, and both his candidates are up, Phil Kwan and Bruce Harris. So I suspect that it's going to be a very long day. It could be well into night, because he wants to be able to set his mark on the Supreme Court. And if you follow New Jersey at all, if you follow some of the decisions in the past with the Supreme Court, they have an incredible impact on New Jersey. One, in particular, educational funding, which affects everybody in this room. Two, some of the issues on the Mount Laurel, the Abbott rulings regarding affordable housing. The Supreme Court has been very active in the past, and they have kind of, I think, have stepped across the boundaries, so to speak. They almost become legislators, and you know what? Every governor has a different philosophy on the type of individual that should sit on the Supreme Court. So he has picked, I think, two excellent candidates. You know, they're going to be debated. I'm sure it's going to be a rough hearing for them tomorrow, because the other side of the fence, they don't want change. I mean, they like what they see, and they're going to resist every efforts from Governor Christie to get his people on the Supreme Court. So I suspect that's going to be a very interesting hearing, but very important to the future of New Jersey, because I think that, I happen to agree with the governor, I think we need to take a different direction. One of the issues that's always faced the 16th legislative district, my district in particular, was the educational funding. And we were sending 75% of the funding to roughly 25% of the schools. primarily the Abbott districts, primarily in the urban areas, and really at expense to our districts. And we were basically subsidizing the districts in the Abbotts. And you know, I don't think that's always been fair to our students. And I think that we need a new educational formula. And I think the governor, for the first time in the last couple of years, has actually increased the funding for our districts as well as throughout the state, which is important. Because you know, those of you who are paying your tuition, I'm sure most of you are, you know how difficult it is and how expensive it is. And you need help. And so we're trying to do that at Trenton. Those are some of the big issues, I think. Every year, by constitution, we need to adopt the balanced budget by July 1st. So the month of June, we're usually down at Trenton, you know, at least every Monday and Thursday, sometimes other days, because as we get closer to July 1st, obviously, the Senate has their agenda, the Assembly has their agenda, the governor has his agenda. And so we have to come together. You need 21 votes in the Senate, 41 votes in the Assembly, and the governor has to sign it. So there's always a lot of give and take during the budget process. It's an interesting time to be in Trenton, especially this year, because you have the Senate president who wants one tax cut, and you got the governor who wants another tax cut. So somebody's going to have to compromise, somebody's going to have to blink, and it's going to be a very interesting scenario. So I happen to sit on the Senate Judiciary Committee, as I indicated, which I think is great. I also sit on the Senate Environment Committee, and I thought when I was asked to be on the Environment Committee, I said, oh, that's a great committee. I never imagined how controversial, believe it or not, sitting on the Senate Environment Committee would be. Last week we had a big vote up whether last year the governor withdrew us from REGI, which is the regional gas initiative that 10 other states are in, and the environmentalists thought it was wrong. It was brought up, and that was a very controversial vote. I mean, you'd be amazed at the emails I've gotten. And you know, we don't always do things right in Trenton. Sometimes we have to go back and correct things, but it's amazing how some of these environmental issues are so controversial. So it's been quite an experience. I happen to vote for the bill, and I've got literally hundreds of emails, pro and con. I mean, nasty emails. I mean, it's incredible. And so, yeah, that's part of the job. And sometimes, as part of the failure, you have to pick yourself up and move on. And, you know, as long as you can vote the way you believe, and then, you know, you can go to bed at night with a clean conscience, I think that's the most important thing. No matter what you do, if you stand by your values and your morals, and you actually do what you think is right, you can never, you know, you can never second guess yourself. So those are some of the highlights in Trenton. I'd like to, you don't want to listen to me the whole time, I'd like to hear from you what questions that you have in mind, and whether it's about the economy, about your future, about education, whatever. Let's open it up. These are always better interactive, so to speak. Who wants to be the first one to ask a question? Go ahead.
When running for center, were you had some competitors?
Yes.
And difficulties that thought that you might lose or win?
But with the new district, that's a very good question. With the new district, I worked harder and I spent more money this past election than I have in the previous three elections I've run. Because one, it's a new area, and two, it's the balance is more Democrats than Republicans. So I'm a Republican in my district. So I had to get out to South Brunswick, I had to get out to Princeton, I had to get out to Hunter County, areas where they don't know me. You know, I was a freeholder here, I was mayor of Branchburg, I represented Somerset County Assembly for 14 years. People knew me in this district. So it was really an outreach for me. And it was a very competitive election. And unfortunately, you know, many times, and you see it right now in the primaries, which drives me nuts, it got very negative. They started. My running mate happened to be sick, and they took advantage of the fact that he hadn't been in Trenton, and they tried to lump us together like that we never went down there. So it got to be a little nasty. Fortunately, we were successful, but it took a lot more hard work and a lot more money. And you know, these days elections are not cheap, and you know, to get your message out, you got to spend a lot of money. So, yes.
When you go to try to pass a bill, for example, say the gay marriage bill or a bill for housing for people with autism, different ones, how does that go to the minority ability? I just want to know: do you talk with other people that are on there from each council when you go to vote, or how do you guys pass a bill when you go? Do you get your opinion on there? What people want?
Yeah, we have our opinion. I mean, lobbyists. You always hear lobbyists. You think it's a bad word. You know, lobbyists are very, I think, instrumental in providing a great deal of resource and information regarding bills, because You got to look at the New Jersey legislature. You got 80 assembly persons and 40 senators from all parts of the state. Now, I can assure you that the issues in Somerset County are completely different than the issues in Cape May or the issues in Sussex County. So to get them all together, to get 41 votes and 21 votes is not always easy. And, you know, I happen to be a lawyer by trade, but, you know, there's a lot of issues, a lot of areas I don't know. And so we have to rely on our staff. We have to rely on Office of Legislative Services, and we have to rely on the lobbyists for information so that we can come to a decision. And these issues, gay marriage in particular, is a very difficult issue. And, you know,
Right here we have a gay group on our campus. We have a very large gay community at RNCC for our club. And it's, like, hard to get these bills passed because you've got to go through each year to see
Fortunately, things tend to become political. I mean, this whole Reggie vote, I couldn't tell you how political that was, but the whole issue of the gay marriage, and, you know, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. First of all, everyone is entitled to the same rights under our law. And so whether we get that by putting it on the ballot or if we get it by passing it, the problem is right now you have a governor who says he's not going to sign it. So that's what happened.
Yeah, that's what I don't get. Like, you guys do all the work, and then he goes and vetoes it.
That's the advantage of being governor. I mean, you have that prerogative, and, you know, it's, in particular, the New Jersey governor is probably the most powerful governor in the nation because of the line I veto, and because of the veto power, and because of the appointments that he has. So, yeah, he has an awful lot of power if he doesn't agree with you, you know.
How many times can you bring it back to the table?
You can keep bringing it up. What happens now is it passed the assembly. We're talking about the gay marriage. It passed the assembly, it passed the Senate. It went to his desk, he vetoed it within a day. They sent it back. Now, they can bring that veto up anywhere from today until the last legislative day in this session, which would be 2014. Because what's going to happen is next year, the entire legislature, including the governor, is up for re-election. 2013. And that session, the session I'm in now, doesn't end until the first Tuesday of January 2014. So they can bring that veto up anytime they want. And I suspect that the Senate president and the speaker are waiting to see what happens. One, whether the governor's reelected. Two, whether the governor goes and runs for vice president. Or three, if there's a change in membership. Because to override the governor, you need 27 votes in the Senate, 54 votes in the Assembly. And right now they had about 24 votes in the Senate. Now, if it changes, if a couple people retire and new people are either appointed or elected, or if people lose the election, what happens, and the worst time in government is lame duck, between the election a year from this November and January. That's the worst time in government, because what they do is, especially if it's an election year, if there's anything controversial, they'll say, we'll do it later. What later is after the election, what you call lame duck, when people are going out, new people are coming in, and they pass the controversial legislation.
This might apply to any principle, just like for the housing, because they closed the Section 8 down for autism housing, I heard.
Right. I don't know if they did or not.
Yeah, that's someone came to my Asperger group and said that they were like, the waiting list, they're on 1,000, and if the parents pass away, they'll be in Newark or in bad areas until the housing list opens up again. Like, they're on there for 1,000, but if they don't get the housing before their number comes up, they can't pick where they want. They go into the emergency location, and when the parents pass away, they put them wherever they can find a house. And that's what they do with the Asperger thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of, yeah, and that's, you know, let me tell you, housing for, yeah, that's a big issue. As well as, I happen to sit on the Midland Foundation Board, and the Midland Housing, I mean, they have the same, they have, like, right now, I think, 5 or 6 community homes. And the community homes are so helpful, especially to the families and the parents. So the problem is, the money has dried up for those. We actually have 3 in Branchburg right now. And they love it. The neighbors love having them. They love being there. You know, they're independent. It's great. The problem is the funding.
Yeah, that's right now.
The funding is, and hoping that when the economy turns around, some of the priorities will change, and we'll be able to increase the funding for those areas and autism too. Other questions? Yes.
Hi, I'm a visiting student from a different university, but I'd like to know your intake on the situation that is going on now among the teachers in the union and government personnel, because the impact of the situation that the teachers are on strike and they are not willing to advise students as an extra part of their job is being affecting the students mostly. The students are the most harmed group of this conflict. So I would like to know, what's your take? Like, are teachers and the governor more heading towards compromise, or how do you view the situation?
I would hope that they're headed towards compromise. It's a very good point. And the end, there's no question, and there's no mystery that during the campaign, the NJEA spent hundreds of thousands of dollars against Chris Christie, hoping to defeat him. He won the election. What they should have, in my opinion, what they should have done is said, okay, that was the campaign governor. Go with their hat in their hand, sit down, we want to work with you. Because really our interest is education and the students. They took an opposite approach. And what happens is it became, you know, name calling back and forth. And, you know, they challenged him, he challenged, you know, the head of it. They told the head to resign and whatnot. So they've been battling. And I think they made a strategic mistake, because the governor's going to be governor for 4 years. He may be governor for 8 years, the way he's going. So they should have come with their hat in their hand and said, okay, that was a campaign, that was rhetoric. Let's sit down and work together. Because I know the governor would have worked with them. But now, because he had, the governor had success last year with a bipartisan effort to reform the health benefits, he's had some success. And so now he's kind of riding a high. And he wants certain changes. One in particular is tenure. And I think he's going to get some, because now the other side of the political fence, Senator Ruiz has a bill. She happens to be the chairwoman of the Senate Education Committee. She has a bill in place right now that's going to revise tenure. So he's starting to get some traction that way. So I still think that they should sit down. And he had a town meeting the other day, and he told the teacher, "Don't worry, I'm going to be kinder and gentler." Because, you know, one thing, whether you like the governor or not, one thing is he speaks his mind, and, you know, he's not afraid to call it the way he sees it. And, you know, sometimes his town meetings, he's pretty tough on people. And so it was interesting, and she was really scared and nervous. But I think he indicated to her that he's willing to sit down and talk. And so I think that both sides have to come closer to the middle, because the issues impacting education are so important in the state, and you got to work together. And unfortunately, what doesn't happen in Washington is they don't work together at all. They're so partisan. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, the bickering that goes back and forth, I mean, it would drive me nuts. But the governor has a track record of getting the Democrats together, because without the Democrats, we can't pass anything, because they have control of both houses, significant control. So for him to get his policies through, he's got to work with the Democrats. The fact that last year he was able to do that with Steve Sweeney and Sheila Oliver, I think is a good sign. And I think that the same thing's going to happen in the educational areas. He's talking about the Opportunity Scholarship Act. He's talking about a proposal to give all students from certain towns $1,000 per year for their college tuition. He's got some good ideas, and there's no question that tenure needs to be reformed a bit. But it's a two-way street, and I think they got to work together. But it's a very good observation. I'm optimistic we're going to see some changes. I really am.
I hope so.
Me too.
I have no advisors on now.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Who else had a question?
I had a question. Yeah. So I was watching CNN, and I saw Governor Christie in one of the interviews. It was interviewed by Chris Cuomo. And he said that he wasn't ready for a presidential race. And I was just wondering, how does one decide that you're ready for an election?
He's going to what? I'm sorry.
How does someone decide that you're ready for an election?
Well, that's a good question. I think experience has a lot to do. I mean, you got to remember, up until he became governor, he was a freeholder for one term, and he was U.S. attorney. He did a great job at U.S. attorney. But being a freeholder and being governor of the state of New Jersey is like night and day. And so he's still learning. And to run, it's very difficult to run statewide. But to run throughout the whole nation,
yeah,
you need an organization set up. You need a lot of money. I mean, you really need to do your homework. And usually you find in past elections that the individuals who get in late in the game don't usually do too well, because you got to have people on the ground. You got to have organization. You got to have grassroots in every state, especially the major states. So I don't think he was ready for that. Plus, you know, I think he becomes even worth more of a commodity if he turns things around in New Jersey, gets reelected. And, you know, next time around, there's not going to be an incumbent. You know, it's very difficult to run against an incumbent. You know, President Obama's going to be very difficult to beat. I mean, he's sitting on, you know, almost $1 billion. And we found out, you know, when my dad ran against incumbent governor, it's very difficult to run against incumbent, because they have a lot of powers, a lot of perks, a lot of name recognition. So in 4 years from now, there won't be an incumbent, and I suspect that most of the people who are running for a Republican nomination won't be around. So, you know, if Governor Christie does a good job, learns a little bit more, and gets his name out there, I think he'll be a very viable candidate in 4 years. So I think that's what he figures. Now, the interesting issue will be if Mitt Romney asks him to be the vice president candidate. You know what? Then he's got a tough decision to make. He said in the past, no, but he is starting to fudge a little bit. He's leaving that door open. And the thing about that is, and I could be a delegate to the Republican National Convention. It's only, if he accepts a nomination as vice president, it's only a 2-month election. Because the Republican Convention is the last, like August 28th, 29th, 30th. The election's November. So, you know, could he do that? It's a lot different being a vice president candidate than being the presidential candidate. So, you know, the structure's in place. You know, so it's a tough decision. I mean, he could theoretically run. They could lose. And he kind of becomes like the leader of the party next time around. So, you know, he's got a lot of tough choices to make. But I think he wasn't ready. I think if he had one or two more years in office, he might have run. But you know, he's very bright, and you know, I think he knows what he wants to do. So, you know, I think that he's got a great future. That's why I don't think he was ready this time around. But it's very difficult to run nationwide.
Is there any other bills that they're trying to do for people with Asperger's about trying to get jobs and everything? So a lot of companies, well, once the young adult says they have Asperger's or in the beginning, they don't go through the job by saying, well, with their disability, we're not capable of hiring you because you have a disability or you have Asperger's or that. What are they trying to, like, find out? I mean, I know there's something if a company hires so many people with disabilities, they get a tax write-off. And I actually tried that approach. I said, well, with my learner's ability on the three schools, and they're like, well, we're not geared to hire people with disabilities. Well, if you hire me, you get a tax write-off. And a lot of them don't like that strategy. I know you guys have that, that they hire people with disabilities. What are they working in the government on?
Well, you need more incentives from Trenton, and you need more education. I mean, I happen, as I indicated, I sit on the Midland Board Foundation.
Yeah.
They actually have a Midland training program.
I know them from Allies in Crystal, Dell.
Right, and they train them on site, the individuals, and many of the local businesses, many of the companies in Somerset County hire them. And it's good for the company, it's good for the individuals. So we need more of that. We need more tax incentives from Trenton. We need more education to tell companies these individuals are out there, and you know, they're great workers. And you know, they
all go to them, and they'll say, well, the government has to educate consumers because if an Asperger makes a mistake, we lose money out of our business. That's
but,
biggest concern.
They become productive members of society, and it's very good for everybody. Yes?
Yes, in the debate, I'd like to know your stance on the Pell Grant, also the doubling of student loan, as well as the rise in textbook prices and college tuition.
Okay, that's a couple questions in one. Okay.
So let's talk about the Pell Grant. Right now, Pell Grant is $5,550.
Right. And there's discussions about increasing.
Well, I believe Congress was talking about, please correct me if I'm wrong, lowering that that grant to $4,680. I know that Obama would like to increase that grant to $5,680.
Well, obviously, I mean, I would be in favor if the money's available to increase it to help individuals. It is a federal program. I don't get to vote on that, as you know. I'm state legislator. I don't vote on those. But obviously, if we can increase tuition help for students, I'm all for it.
How do you feel about the rise in textbook and college tuition?
Well, college tuition, I mean, we tried, and not as a former freeholder, obviously, that we used to fund a great portion of Rag Valley Junior College. Freeholders still do from Somerset and Hunter. But as a state legislator, we're trying, and the governor has some ideas. He just announced his program last week, or actually 2 days ago, about $1,000 per individual from certain areas for 4 years to help with the tuition. I think we got to try to keep tuition flat. It's very difficult because of the rise of times. The increase in textbooks, I mean, that's been a problem, an ongoing problem. And you know, I think more and more people are either trying to buy them online, buy them used, or you know, hopefully be able to go online instead of actually having to buy a textbook. Because you know, I've had 3 children gone through college and spent a lot of money on textbooks, and it's a real problem. And it's unfortunately an expense that you have to incur.
I definitely agree with you. However, I'm finding that the same books, let's take for example algebra,
right,
that same book is being charged a year later much more than it was the previous year. So how can we stop that? How can we put a cap on textbooks such as
algebra? Well, we have to speak directly with the publishers to see, you know, why they keep raising the costs. see if their actual costs are going up. And in some cases, their costs are going up because everything costs more money. So, but you know, if they're just artificially increasing, that's wrong. And I think we need to be, through our consumer affairs, through our representatives from the state government, we need to talk to them, have those discussions, and keep it as flat as possible. But, you know, the cost of business goes up. I'm not justifying it, but those are some of the issues that the companies themselves are facing. Just look at the price of gasoline. The time that goes up, that impacts so many different businesses. And so they have to be able to, in my opinion, justify the rise in the prices, because that really hits students at heart. Yes, we have time for a couple more. Yes.
So when you were growing up, you said your father was a representative. Did you see yourself like going in his shoes, being a national leader? Did that develop as you're part of the Branchburg?
It developed a couple of ways. One thing I failed to mention was when my dad ran for governor, I took a semester off from Ithaca College, and I worked in the campaign, as did my brothers and sisters. And I traveled with my dad every day, and many of those days we went to Trenton because he was still a sitting senator from Somerset County. So I got to experience it firsthand, and so I was interested in it at that point. Whether I ever thought I'd be a leader, I didn't know at that point, but it was kind of a natural progression from starting at the township committee, going to the county level, and having an opportunity to go to the state level. It kind of has, it evolved over time. And, I was always interested, and because I was a political science history major, I was always fascinated by government. I thought it was an opportunity to really try to make a difference and try to help people and try to, be part of making policy decisions. And, I've enjoyed it. It's been a great experience. It's a big time commitment, and you have to have thicker and thicker skin. I always didn't have thicker skin years ago. The little things used to bother me a lot. But now, as I have more experience, I don't let those things bother me. Because I can show you, right now I probably have 50 emails, 25 are, you're the worst thing since, 50 or 25 for me, 25 against me. And so, you have to be able to roll with the punches, because no matter, when you make tough decisions in Trenton, somebody's going to be upset. And so, but I think the leadership abilities come as you serve and as you have opportunities to excel. But I was always, because I was exposed to it early on, and we talked politics at the dinner table all the time, obviously. So it kind of came natural. But I never thought I'd be in this position. Yes?
What's your plan from now until 2014? Are you running again?
I'd like to run again next year. What they do is after the census, the Senate terms are 2 years, and then 4 years, 4 years. I happen to be in a two-year term because we have the new district. So if I run next year, it's a four-year term, and we'll see. I take one step at a time. There's really only one more step for me, and that's up or out. And I had no interest in going to Washington, so we'll see what happens. It's a big time commitment. I've been doing it a long time. I really have. I love it, but it does take its toll on the family. Yes.
With economic problems are still quite in effect, and with current students are finding it difficult to find a job and pay back their loans, I have a question. Does the government consider any safety nets for students like us for the future?
For forgiving loans? I don't think so. That's the problem. I think that they're lenient as far as when you have to pay it back, but I don't think that they can forgive the loans. I really don't. And it's a difficult issue because you really can't pay them back until you get a meaningful job employment. And I think they're somewhat flexible as far as the time frame, but I don't see any safety nets or any programs in place to wipe them out. And that's a problem. Yes.
I'm sure I'm not the only one that has this question. Do you think it's wiser to get a bachelor's degree to search for a job, or do you think you should move to grad school?
Very good question. One thing that you've seen over the last 2 or 3 years, an increase in graduate school applications, an increase in law school applications, an increase in medical school applications, because individuals have worked very hard. They've gotten their degrees only to come out after graduation with no jobs. They say, what do we do? And so a lot of them have gone on to law school, medical school, graduate school, hoping that at the other end, there's going to be an increase in jobs and hopefully the economy turns. So it's a difficult decision. Last year at Seton Hall, the applications were the highest they've ever been at Seton Hall Law School, because people don't know what to do, and so people go on to get their grads.
Just in addition to what you're saying, we have students here, we have non-traditional students here who are scientists. They were scientists, but however, they've lost their jobs. They were engineers. They've lost their jobs. And they've had to return to RBCC to reinvent themselves, if you will, or get more education in some other area to access jobs. So it's very, it's concerning.
Very frustrating. It's, at times, it's very depressing. It really is. And I agree with that. I think a lot depends on what's going to happen with our economy.
With all the problems, it seems like there's so many problems out there. Is there not enough money in the government to fix all these problems? It seems to me like they're fixing one. You fix one problem over here, but then you wait here. That's going to get bigger. Then you're not going to be able to fix that problem. So you're fixing one problem A. You're fixing problem A. Or problem A is getting, problem B is getting bigger. Problem B is getting bigger. And all the other ones are getting bigger, but you're fixing one. Is there a way to fix it so that one area, when you're fixing one, the other one doesn't go back up and then the budget goes up and down?
Well, there's only so many resources. There's only so much money in the pot. And one of the problems is...
And everybody's screaming they want help from problem A. Everybody's screaming they want help.
There are hundreds of great organizations out there that, you know, really need money. You know, and how do you select them? How do you make your priorities? I mean, there's criticism that the government spends too much money in a lot of areas and we shouldn't be spending more and more money, because that's not the answer. The answer are private sector jobs, businesses, real jobs. So, you know, it's really priorities, and that's really what the governor's budget message was. These are his priorities for this year, and that's where the funding's going to go.
If you pick the wrong one, then you can mess up the whole
thing.
That's the problem.
A lot of tough challenges, a lot of problems out there, but you're all doing the right thing, and I appreciate the opportunity. Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to address you. And good luck to all of you. I'm hoping things will turn around and come.
Capital, we'd like to give you
thank you very much. I'm a coffee drinker, so
thank you.
I love it. Thank you very much.